next little bit here, I'm going to offer some stimulation to get some more dialogue going about how we're following Jesus and how that's working out. Really what we're getting into today is, I mean, it's essentially Pat Benatar, Maya Angelou, the Puerto Rican Day Parade, all around this idea of belonging. And this is the Google definition, which I have come to despise. And I don't know if you follow Google for your definitions, but they're terrible. And like this, for instance, is what they say belong means. And most of you can read it, okay? It can't just be this. You know, it can't just be being where you belong, like being in the right place at the right time or being categorized correctly. There's got to be more to it. So this is just an internet lesson. We learned that. You're going to learn an internet lesson today too. But Merriam-Webster generally has better definitions than Google. Merriam-Webster pones Google, you could even say. But to be suitable, to be appropriate, or to be advantageous. For instance, a dictionary belongs in every home. That's belonging. It belongs there. You got to have it. You know, that's belonging. You know, in a more exciting, more fun way. To be, this is another one that I like. There's like four or five, but to be attached or bound by birth, allegiance or dependency, like they belong to their homeland. You know, this connection born to a place or to a people. I think when we're getting into belonging, a good example of this is the 50th annual Puerto Rican Day Parade. And I just think it's awesome. And some of you got to go probably today. I hope you did. But it's worth getting into. And it's one of the great things about it is it gives an opportunity for people to belong. It's just making social space for people to belong and get in. You don't even have to be Puerto Rican to get in. And I'm not that Puerto Rican, and I can get into it. You know, we'll see. I just paid $200 for one of those like DNA tests because I have some heritage that's a little bit questionable. We'll find out in a couple months. But maybe let's just say if next year if I find out that I'm more than a little bit Puerto Rican, it's gonna be on the Puerto Rican Day Parade. But I'm open to it. So, but it's a time to celebrate and a time to reinforce this connection, this identity, this belonging for Puerto Rican people of Puerto Rican descent, as well as other Latinos and other folks that want to get into it, that they know where they come from and they have a space to exist. This year, this is another reason. I mean, I'm into the parade every year, like at least as like I beep at everybody with flags or doing anything, and that'll be like the smallest thing that I do, and I don't want to get into the crazier stuff, but this year is huge in terms of Puerto Rican politics. I don't know if you follow what's going on with this discussion of Puerto Rico being essentially a colony and a place where the United States, it's a territory, an annexed territory. And that kind of colonialism is a little bit passe. And most people, when they get into politics at this point, are kind of like, even Mitt Romney is talking about Puerto Rican statehood. So it's kind of like, okay, that's kind of like super normal to even have that discussion. But on November 6th, residents of Puerto Rico are going to vote about this question of who are we in terms of this island? And who are we in terms of this people? And how do we relate? This belonging question, again, has to do with this connection and this purpose and this way of relating. So this year is different, and I'm loving it how it is because it's a two-part vote. By the way, we're not going to get stuff like this in the U.S. The two-part question is first, if you want to move away from Puerto Rico's territorial status, do you like the way it's going right now? Or do you want to move it away from there? The second part asks voters to choose three options rather than remaining a territory. One of them to become a U.S. state, which ultimately the Congress of the United States has to approve. to become an independent independent country, or to be freely associated nation with legal ties to the U.S. So this question of belonging isn't just even do you paint your face with a Puerto Rican flag, or do you kind of beep your horn once a year? Do you go to a parade? Do you show up at an event? But, you know, how are people connected and how are they relating? And the Apostle Paul speaks to belonging to a bunch of people living in the center of perhaps the biggest bully of the day. And we're going to get into bullies as like the anti-belonging people. But he was talking to Rome. These people who lived in Rome were coming out of some damage. And they were damaged people doing damaging things. Rome was kind of like the worst thing for the church and for people who were trying to belong. And they would conquer. They would devastate. They would annihilate your way of life, and all saying, no, this way is better. And that, I think, maybe sounds familiar to you. But here's a couple more verses from Romans chapter 12, as we know it now. Because of the privilege and authority that God has given Paul, me, I give each of you this warning. Don't think you are better than you really are. Be honest in your evaluation of yourselves, measuring yourselves by the faith God has given us. Just as our bodies have many parts and each has a special function, so it is with Christ's body. We are many parts of one body, and we all belong to each other. It goes into a little bit of what that might mean. In his grace, God has given us different gifts for doing certain things well. Belonging is also doing. That's mine, not Paul's. So if God has given you the ability to prophesy, speak out with as much faith as God has given you. If your gift is serving others, serve them well. If you're a teacher, teach well. If your gift is to encourage others, be encouraging. If it is giving, give generously. If God has given you leadership ability, take the responsibility seriously. And if you have a gift for showing kindness to others, do it gladly. But the thing that I'm really speaking about today is this belonging to each other and how that means both this connection and this doing. I think in the Pat Benatarian sense, we all know something about belonging because we know that song, the We Belong to the Night. You know how that one goes? It's like, we belong to the night, we belong to the thunder. You know how that one goes? Kinda. It goes, here's the words, because forget it, right? We belong to the light, we belong to the thunder. We belong to the sound of the words that we've both fallen under. Whatever we deny or embrace, for worse or for better, we belong, we belong, we belong together. Now, first of all, I had to look up the words to this song because I always thought it was, we belong to the night, we belong to each other. You're looking at me like, that is the words. Right, I read you the correct ones. Those are the jacked up words, you know? I don't know how many times I have to hear a song before I understand it, but that's why we started using like PowerPoint during worship and stuff, because somebody heard me singing, and they were like, what are you singing, man? And I had the songs all wrong. No, I'm just kidding, but for people like me, the words helps. To be bound by allegiance or being part of a person, being part of a thing, that's kind of like love, you know, being loved into it. To say that we belong together, this is a misunderstood thing, because what we mean by is you're supposed to love me, and if you break up with me, that's really jacked up. We belong together. It's the rules. The rules have classified us together. Like Cameron's story about marriage before, he could just do that to Becca or she could do it to him. We belong together. We said the words, you can't be mad at me anymore. We all know that doesn't work in relationships. Right? This growing that you're talking about and this love, this is part of belonging together. It has more to do with just we have to sit in the same room for dinner for the rest of our lives. You know, I think for us who are following Christ, to belong is to be attached. It's to be reattached. It's to overcome this alienating destruction in our culture that push us away from connection and away from attachment, both to our Creator and to Jesus, to creation, and especially away from a connection and attachment to each other. So to live in a way that understands that we matter to others and they matter to us is a profound difference. You know, the cosmic faith that a lot of people that you encounter in the United States, that like, I have faith, therefore I go to heaven when I die. And if that's all you're going for, you miss belonging to a people who are living out the community of Shalom right now. And that is to belong to Jesus, to belong to the body of Christ, to belong to the local body, to belong. Maya Angelou is guiding us along today too, because she, this poem I love by her so much, and it's, the stanza is, she's turning up the heat. She's reading this to the United Nations on their 50th birthday of founding in 95. And she's calling on humanity to belong to one another again. And it goes something like this. When we come to it, when the curtain falls on the minstrel show of hate, and the faces sooted with scorn are scrubbed clean, when battlefields and Colosseum no longer rake our unique and particular sons and daughters up with the bruised and bloody grass to lie in identical plots in foreign soil. When the evil is exposed by our connection, our reconnection, when the evil is exposed by our belonging, the minstrel show of hate falls apart. It's so rich. And I would love to just kind of wax poetic on every little bit here, but just I want to talk about something that I think a lot of people might not know too much about, because she throws in there an incredibly loaded term that most people outside the United States, let alone the people inside, aren't going to get. When she says it's a minstrel show of hate, I think a lot of people, when they hear minstrel show, they're thinking of like Monty Python and the Quest for the Holy Grail and the dudes that run around and are singing Brave Sir Robin, Brave Sir Robin, or like European dudes in tights in the 15th century having these little baby harps that they're kind of like, you know, nobody wants to be them really, but you kind of want them around because they're soundtracking you, and every, you know, let's be honest, everybody would love to have somebody soundtracking us, even if it is a goofball minstrel. But it's far more incendiary than that. One of the things she's bringing up, it was this, the minstrel tradition that really got going in the 17th century in the United States and still is out there. Spike Lee took a huge whack at it a couple years ago with one of his films. But it's the last 50 years, it's decreased, this minstrel show, where they were white people who made their living doing music, making fun of black people. And this was like a hugely popular thing in the United States. And it's part of the history of this country that most of the time people don't want to be like, yeah, if there was like top 40 songs for like 200 years, many of them would have been stuff like this. And it's a disgusting, awful thing to have in our history of relating. Some African Americans even took jobs doing minstrel shows because it was a way to make money when they weren't legally allowed to make money. Getting away from being in perpetual enslavement and forced hard work and rape, it was a step up to be able to travel around playing music, even if it was at the loss of your dignity and at the questioning of your humanity. But the minstrel show of hate was bullying at its worst. It was popularizing the dehumanization of people, of our sisters and our brothers, and it undermined the chance, especially for people of African descent, to belong on this continent in a way that wasn't as a mammy or a pickaninny or an Uncle Tom or a Sambo or a coon or a brute. If you want to get into some more stuff about that particular stuff, there's I have a few books and a couple of just great movie resources that you could check out. But into this kind of bullying where it becomes this, no, we're all just having fun. It's just fun for the people who are making fun. My friend Ann Dylan Schneider has written a few articles about the effectiveness of bullying. Why bullying is just the most effective tool if you want to undermine somebody's sense of belonging. And it's effective in causing depression, in increasing the chance for diabetes and obesity in kids. It increases a child's attempt at suicide or violence against others, bullying. The reason that makes her work interesting to me is that that most important thing that bullying does is it breaks down someone's belonging. When you bully, you constantly attack and undermine their sense of belonging and reinforce their new notion that they do not belong, that they are not connected, that they're not attached, that they don't have a place, they don't have a people. So how much does even Paul speak to that pain of alienation? So rather than undermining someone's concept of belonging, we're encouraged that our work of the way of Jesus is to mine their sense of belonging, help them to belong, give them an opportunity that if they want to belong, they could. While we have a culture at a Circle of Hope of doing this really well, for the most part, I think, this is a small enough thing for most of us to focus on in the next couple days. Think of how you're making space to mine someone else's sense of belonging. Sometimes it's so easy. Like, for instance, I went Saturday night. There's like tons of stuff happening in the neighborhood. Martha and I can't walk from our house to the ATM because we're going to go to this like French food benefit thing for the Walking Fish Theater without seeing literally like 15 people we know. We walk up the street from the Mac machine that works now, which is nice. And there's like 10 of our friends, or a couple, 12, 13, I don't even know, but sitting around outside the parklet deal on Frankfurt Avenue. And it was so funny because they're all happy to see us, but realizing the three little groups of people didn't know each other. They didn't even know that most of them belonged to the same church. They didn't make the connection, you know? And it's kind of funny. It's like, oh, you're all eating pizza and that's cool. How can you get put together? And how do those people feel like they belong? Someone introduced them. Says, oh, you don't know Christina? Oh my God, Christina and Bobby. You must know them. They're my personal friends, but they're part of our Broad and Washington congregation. They're here and that's special. So now you have to say hi to them, okay, today. Sorry to call you out, friends, but I love you guys. Introducing somebody who may not know someone else. And this is something, of course, that a lot of you kind of lovingly pick on me for doing because I introduce you to your roommate or something like that sometimes, which has happened actually. And I'm like, look, man, like, there's only like so many like relationship webs that I can master in a single moment, you know, like, and you too, you know. But when you're just introducing people, it can be really fun. And one of the things it does is it helps you draw somebody in towards connection. Likely they touch, even if it is like a handshake. That's really cool. If they have a broken arm, they'll left hand you and see how that goes, you know, and it's fun. Our cells are the best place where this is happening, of course. Any kind of meeting or social gathering, it can happen, but those are some skills that you need to develop. You don't need a lot of skills to be part of a cell. You don't need any skills other than sometimes how to put on your shoes or, like, you know, get to a place, which can be difficult sometimes. But they're not just places to receive data for somebody else to do work for you or to fill up one of our limited spots in one of our precious nights. It's a space to belong and to connect and to do together in that kind of belonging. When you invite someone to connect to your cell, you aren't just saying, let's eat brownies and laugh and maybe pray a little bit together on a weekly basis. You know, you're offering a chance at deeper belonging with you and with your other people in the group. To talk to someone in the loud times before and after these public meetings, you aren't just looking for someone to talk to about the nice day that it was today, you know, to be like, how many people can I say, gee, it was a nice day, you know, and then like try to like break the record or something like that. You're looking for connection, looking to help make space for someone else to belong. And you need to trust to do that. You need to trust that you belong to Jesus, that you have this connection and you have this mission together. And being part of this together is to assert your belonging, especially against your own doubts. So I want to speak just before we close just to those doubts for a minute, because that's the thing that really can break you down, doubting your sense of belonging. Because I hope that you can hear Jesus' words to you and to everybody: I love you. I hope that you can hear those words today in a loud enough way to encourage your belonging. We're all trying to fall under those words. Just like Pat Benatar said in the song that I now know the words to, we belong to the sound of the words that we've both fallen under, that Jesus said that he loves us. And whether we deny or embrace, for worse or for better, we belong. We belong. We belong together. Let's open up another space of silence where we're going to have time for you to speak if you want to. Have a couple minutes for some short anecdotes or questions. But let's see if you can't hear those words again from Jesus in the silence. And I'll lead us in a short prayer.